A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel's been on a journey. He picked up a nylon EDC belt, one of those ratchet strap ones, mostly because it was cheap and he wasn't sure he'd like the system. Now he says he couldn't go a day without it. He's got his hands full constantly. Computer work, grabbing Ezra, doing DIY. And the belt thing, it always bugged him. Holes were never exactly where he needed them. This one is insanely strong, almost infinitely adjustable, and he's asking two things. What's this material, and why does it feel so durable? And how does the ratchet system actually work? And what should you look for when buying one?
The where was this all my life? Reaction is the right one. The belt industry was stuck for a century.
Leather and horse. That was it.
And the thing is, leather belts are fine if you're holding up trousers and that's the whole job. But the moment you start hanging things off a belt, a holster, a multi-tool pouch, a modular attachment system, the old model falls apart. You need load-bearing capacity, you need micro-adjustability, and you need something that doesn't stretch or deform over time. That's the EDC belt category in a sentence.
EDC being everyday carry.
Right. And the category was born in the concealed carry and tactical world, where a belt isn't an accessory. It's part of your equipment. Now it's gone fully mainstream. But the engineering is still driven by those requirements.
So we've got two innovations that got bolted together and created something genuinely new. The webbing material and the ratchet buckle.
And they solve completely different problems. The material solves the strength and durability problem. It doesn't stretch, doesn't crack, doesn't care about sweat or rain. The ratchet solves the fit problem. You're not choosing between the hole that's too tight and the hole that's too loose. You get quarter-inch increments.
Let's start with the material, because that's what you feel the moment you pick one of these up. It's got this heft, not weight exactly, density.
It's nylon webbing, but not the nylon webbing you'd find on a cheap backpack strap. The stuff on Daniel's belt, and on most of the good EDC belts, is high denier nylon, typically woven at around 1.5 inches wide, and in the better belts, it's got a polymer core running through it for stiffness.
Denier, define that.
Denier is a measure of fiber thickness. Specifically, it's the mass in grams of 9,000 meters of the fiber. Higher denier means thicker individual fibers, which means the woven fabric is stronger and more abrasion resistant. Standard backpack webbing might be 600 denier. The good EDC belts are often in the 1,000 to 1,600 denier range.
So the number is literally just how heavy the thread is.
And when you weave thick threads tightly, you get something that resists edge fraying, resists abrasion, and distributes load across the whole width of the belt. That's why Daniel's belt feels rock solid. The weave density is doing real structural work.
Except he mentioned the cut edge frayed.
And that's not a quality issue. That's, well, we'll get to that. But the material itself is the same family of stuff used in climbing slings and military load-bearing equipment. Core Essentials, who basically created this category, describes their webbing as tactical grade. And that's not pure marketing. It's the same nylon 6/6 polymer used in a lot of military gear.
Nylon 6/6 being?
A specific type of nylon, polyamide 6/6, that's got higher melting point and better tensile strength than nylon 6, which is the other common variant. Nylon 6/6 is what you want in something that's going to take load and friction. It's also what's used in automotive airbags and high-performance tire cord. The material is no joke.
So when Daniel says it feels super durable, he's not imagining it. He's holding something that's chemically and structurally closer to a climbing sling than to a leather belt.
Right, and the strength ratings back that up. Corey's belts are tested to withstand significant force. We're talking hundreds of pounds of tensile load. That's why people trust them for holster attachment. A leather belt under the same load will stretch, deform, and eventually fail at the buckle hole.
The hole is the failure point.
Always. A leather belt with holes is perforated along its entire usable length. Each hole is a stress concentrator. Over time, the hole you use most stretches into an oval, then a tear. Nylon webbing doesn't have that problem because it's a continuous, uniform structure. There are no holes.
Which brings us back to the ratchet. But before we get there, you mentioned quality variations in the material. What's the cheap versus premium divide actually look like?
A few things. First, denier count. Cheaper belts use thinner fibers, maybe 600 or 800 denier, and the weave is looser. You can feel it immediately. The belt is floppier, less substantial. Second, the polymer core. Premium belts often have a stiffening core sandwiched inside the webbing, which gives it that rigid, load-bearing feel. Cheap belts skip that. Third, the edge finishing. Good webbing has clean, tight selvage edges that resist fraying. Cheap webbing frays if you look at it wrong.
Selvage edges?
The finished edge of the weave that prevents unraveling. On good webbing, it's dense and uniform. On cheap webbing, it's fuzzy and inconsistent.
And Daniel's frayed cut end. You were about to say something about that.
That's a user thing, not a material thing. Nylon webbing frays when you cut it, period. Doesn't matter if it's 1600, denier, tactical grade, or bargain bin stuff. The fibers are thermoplastic. They melt. The standard fix is to heat seal the cut end with a lighter or a hot knife. You just run a flame along the edge and the fibers fuse together into a hard, clean finish. It takes 5 seconds.
Daniel's going to feel very vindicated that his belt isn't defective.
It's the first thing anyone who works with nylon webbing learns. If you don't seal the cut, it frays. That's just how the material behaves.
So the material story is high denier nylon 6/6 tight weave, polymer core in the good ones, and it's the same polymer family as climbing gear and military load-bearing straps. The strength is real, the durability is real, and the fraying at the cut is fixable with a lighter.
That's the material. But the material alone doesn't make the belt. The real magic is in that buckle.
Let's talk about how the ratchet actually works.
So the ratchet mechanism is deceptively simple. Inside the webbing, or sometimes as a separate layer bonded to it, there's a tooth track. Think of it as a plastic or nylon rail with teeth cut into it running the length of the adjustable section. The buckle contains a spring-loaded pawl, a small metal or plastic tooth that engages with the track. When you push the belt through the buckle, the pawl clicks over each tooth. When you pull back, the pawl locks into place and prevents the belt from loosening.
Each click is one tooth.
And each tooth is typically a quarter inch of adjustment. That's the key number. A traditional leather belt has holes spaced 1 inch apart. If you're between holes, you're out of luck. You're either cinching too tight or letting it hang loose. With quarter inch increments, you can dial it in exactly.
And if you're carrying weight on the belt? A holster? Pouches? Whatever. That exact fit matters a lot more than it does for just holding up pants.
Massively. If your belt is even slightly too loose, the weight of a holster will pull it down and shift the whole carry position. Too tight, and you're uncomfortable all day. The ratchet solves that completely. And it's not just about the initial fit. You can micro-adjust throughout the day. Loosen it a click when you sit down at a desk. Tighten it a click when you stand up and move around.
It becomes a tool rather than a static garment.
That's exactly the shift Daniel described. He's constantly switching contexts. Computer, parenting, DIY, and the belt adapts in real time. That's the knock-on effect of the mechanism. It changes how you use the thing.
Where did this system actually come from?
Corey Essentials. They launched a Kickstarter in 2015 that raised over $1 million. That was the moment the category was born. Before that, ratchet belts existed. There were some dress belt versions with a similar idea, but nobody had applied it to a heavy-duty nylon load-bearing belt. Corey put those two things together and created the template that everyone else now follows.
$1 million on Kickstarter for a belt.
It sounds absurd until you wear one. Then you get it.
I believe you. So the mechanism is a tooth track and a spring-loaded pawl. What makes a good one versus a bad one?
The pawl is the critical wear point. In a good belt, the pawl is metal, usually stainless steel or a hardened alloy, and it engages with a metal-reinforced track, metal on metal. In a cheap belt, the pawl is plastic. Plastic pawls wear down. The spring loses tension. The teeth round off. And when the pawl fails, the belt slips.
And if you're carrying a holster, slipping isn't just annoying.
It's a failure of the primary function. The concealed carry ink comparison of Blackbeard versus Corey belts, they did a really thorough breakdown, highlighted exactly this. The Corey buckle uses a metal-on-metal engagement. The Blackbeard, which is a solid belt in its own right, uses a slightly different mechanism but still emphasizes metal components. The cheap knockoffs on Amazon use plastic pawls, and you can feel the difference after a few months of daily wear. The clicks get softer, then mushy, then the belt just doesn't hold.
What about the track itself? How is it attached to the webbing?
That's the other failure mode. In premium belts, the track is either embedded inside the webbing during the weaving process, or it's a separate layer that's been heat bonded and stitched. The cheap method is adhesive only, just glued on. And glue fails. It delaminates. The track peels away from the webbing, and now you've got a nylon strap with a useless buckle.
So when you're buying one of these, you check two things immediately. Is the pawl metal? And how is the track attached?
Those are the big ones. The third thing is webbing thickness and stiffness. Pick it up, flex it, see if it feels substantial. If it's floppy and light, it's probably low denier with no polymer core. It'll work for a while, but it won't hold up to load.
What about the buckle housing itself? The part you see.
On good belts, it's aluminum or steel. On cheap ones, it's zinc alloy or plastic with a metallic coating. The weight tells you immediately a good buckle has heft. And the finish matters too. Corey's buckles have a pretty durable coating. Cheaper ones chip and scratch within weeks.
So, the strength paradox. Here's interesting. The webbing can handle hundreds of pounds of tensile load, but the mechanism is only as strong as that tiny pawl and track interface.
The webbing isn't the weak point. The webbing could hold a small car. The weak point is that quarter-inch engagement between the pawl and a single tooth on the track. If that tooth shears off or the pawl slips, the whole system fails. That's why precision machining matters. The pawl and track have to mate perfectly. Any slop, any tolerance issue, and you get movement under load.
And the load in this case isn't just static weight. It's dynamic. You're moving. The holster is bouncing. The belt is flexing.
Cycling the pawl hundreds of times a day without you even noticing. Every step, every time you sit or stand, the load shifts slightly. A well-machined metal pawl handles that indefinitely. A plastic one develops microfractures.
So Daniel's question about what to look for. The answer is pretty clear. Metal pawl, bonded or embedded track, high denier webbing with a polymer core, and a buckle housing that doesn't feel like it came out of a gumball machine.
And honestly, the price point tells you a lot. The good ones are in the $60 to $100 range. Below $40, you're almost certainly getting a plastic pawl and adhesive-only track. It might feel fine out of the box, but it won't last.
Is there a middle ground? Something that's not $100, but still solid?
There are a few. The Blackbeard belt runs around $60 and uses a slightly different mechanism. It's a lever lock rather than a pure ratchet pawl, but it's well built. Next belt is another one in that range. The key is to look for the metal pawl and the track attachment method. If the product page doesn't mention either of those things, that's your answer.
Silence is informative.
In belt marketing, absolutely. If they're proud of the mechanism, they'll tell you it's stainless steel. If they say high-quality ratchet system and nothing else, it's plastic.
Let's talk about the adjustment experience itself, because Daniel said something interesting. He wasn't sure he'd like the ratchet system, and now he can't go back.
The skepticism is understandable. It sounds gimmicky. A belt that clicks? But the first time you put one on and realize you can set it exactly where you want it, not sort of close, not, I'll just suck in my stomach for this hole, it clicks. No pun intended.
I used to have a leather belt where the perfect hole was between two holes. I spent 2 years mildly uncomfortable.
And you probably didn't think about it consciously. You just accepted that belts are like that. That's the thing Daniel's getting at. You don't know there's a better way until you stumble into it. The entire belt industry had normalized a bad fit for a century.
The quarter-inch increment thing, is that universal across ratchet belts?
Pretty much. Some are slightly finer, some slightly coarser, but quarter-inch is the standard. Corey's track is cut to that spec, and most of the competitors have followed suit. It's enough granularity to feel like infinite adjustment without making the mechanism overly complex.
And the release. How do you actually loosen it?
Usually, a small lever on the side or underside of the buckle. You lift it, and it disengages the pawl from the track so you can pull the belt free. On core belts, the lever is on the underside, and it's designed to be operated with one hand. That matters more than you'd think. If you're trying to loosen the belt while holding a child or a tool, you don't want to be fumbling with two hands.
Daniel's hands are always full.
the one-handed release is a real usability feature, not just a spec sheet bullet point. And the better belts have a release that's firm enough to prevent accidental disengagement, but smooth enough to operate without looking.
Accidental release would be bad.
Catastrophic in the wrong situation. If you're carrying a holster and the release lever snags on something, you've just dropped your entire carry setup. The good designs recess the lever or add a guard so it can't catch on clothing or seatbelts.
So we've got material science, precision machining, and now ergonomics and failure mode engineering. This is a surprisingly deep product for something that just holds your pants up.
That's what makes it such a good Daniel prompt. It's a mundane object that turns out to be an interesting piece of engineering when you look at it closely, and the fact that the category essentially didn't exist 10 years ago, that's remarkable. Corey's Kickstarter was 2015. Before that, if you wanted a strong, adjustable belt, your options were basically a thick leather belt with holes,
or a military surplus web belt with a friction buckle.
Which works, but it's not exactly precise. You pull it tight and hope the friction holds. The ratchet is a completely different approach.
What about the webbing itself? Does it stretch over time? Leather does.
Nylon 6/6 has very low creep. Creep being the technical term for gradual deformation under constant load. Leather creeps significantly. That's why old belts develop a curve and the hole elongates. Nylon webbing, especially the high denier stuff with a polymer core, resists creep extremely well. It'll develop a slight set around your waist shape, but it won't stretch out the way leather does.
So the fit you set on day one is still the fit on day 300?
Pretty close. The webbing might break in slightly, become a little more flexible, but the length doesn't change. The track doesn't migrate. The quarter-inch increment that worked in January still works in August.
Which is more than I can say for most things I own.
That's the appeal. It's a buy-at-once product, or at least the good ones are.
Before we wrap up, Hilbert's been making faces back there. I think he has something to say about this.
1994. Summer job at a luggage factory in Newark. We made nylon webbing straps for suitcases. Same material, same stuff.
Wait, really?
1600 denier nylon? 6/6. Spools of it came in on trucks from Delaware. We cut it, heat sealed the ends, stitched the buckles on. The heat sealing is the part your brother missed.
Daniel's frayed edge.
You cut nylon webbing, you seal it. That's not optional. Factory had a hot knife, basically a soldering iron with a flat blade. You run it along the cut and the fibers melt together. Takes 3 seconds. If you don't do it, it frays. Doesn't matter how good the webbing is.
So Daniel's belt isn't defective. He just skipped a step.
He skipped the only step that matters after cutting. The material's fine.
What else did you learn at this luggage factory?
The buckles are where they cut corners. Always. The webbing is the webbing. It's commodity. You buy it by the roll. It's the same stuff whether it goes on a $50 bag or a $200 bag. The buckle is where the price difference lives.
That tracks with what we were saying about metal versus plastic pawls.
We had a strap, bestseller for about 18 months. Used a plastic quick-release buckle. Looked great. Felt solid in the showroom. First winter, we started getting returns. The plastic got brittle in the cold. Buckles were shattering in people's driveways in Minnesota. Whole product line recalled.
So you've been suspicious of plastic buckles ever since?
I check. Every belt, every bag, every piece of gear with a buckle, I check what it's made of before I buy it. Plastic fails in the cold, metal doesn't.
That's exactly the thing with ratchet belts. The pawl is the equivalent of that quick-release buckle. If it's plastic, it's a time bomb.
The material's real. The tactical-grade marketing, that's mostly real. The nylon is the same stuff the military uses. But the buckle is where they either spend the money or they don't. And you can't see it from the outside. You have to look inside the mechanism.
How do you check?
You push the release and look at the pawl. If it's shiny, it's metal. If it's matte and feels soft when you tap it with a fingernail, it's plastic. I've done it in stores. People look at me funny. I don't care.
This is the most Hilbert thing you've ever said.
I've still got a roll of that webbing in a box somewhere. 1600 denier. Unused. Kept meaning to make something out of it.
Of course you do.
The hot knife, too. The exact one from the factory. They let me keep it when the place shut down in 97.
You have an industrial hot knife from a defunct luggage factory.
It's a good tool.
I have so many questions.
The webbing yellows after about 20 years. Gets stiff. But it doesn't lose strength. That's the thing about nylon 6/6. It outlasts the product it's attached to.
You're saying Daniel's belt will be functional long after he's tired of it.
If the pawl's metal, yeah. The webbing will be fine. The buckle might outlast him.
That's a useful calibration. We've been talking about durability in terms of daily wear, but you're talking about decades.
I've seen it. The stuff doesn't degrade. UV will eventually break it down if you leave it in the sun for a few years, but on a belt that's covered by a shirt most of the time, it'll last.
All right. I think we've covered the material, the mechanism, and now the multi-decade durability testimony from a man with a hot knife.
Just seal the cut edge. That's all I came out here to say.
That and the thing about the plastic buckles shattering in Minnesota.
Fact two.
Where does this leave the traditional leather belt? Is the ratchet belt going to kill it? Or is this a niche product for people who carry things?
I think it's a niche that's going to expand, but it won't replace leather entirely. There are situations where a leather belt is still the right choice. Formal settings, certain professional environments where nylon webbing reads as too tactical. But for anyone who carries anything on their belt, and that's a growing number of people, not just a concealed carry crowd, the ratchet belt is just objectively better.
As the category matures, we're going to see more brands enter with cheaper knockoffs. The buying guidance from this episode is going to matter more, not less.
That's the thing. Coray created the category, but they didn't patent it into a monopoly. There are dozens of competitors now, and the quality range is enormous. The same product that changed Daniel's life for $60 could be a frustrating piece of junk for $25. The difference is entirely in the mechanism.
Metal paw, bonded track, high denier webbing. Check those three things and you're probably fine.
Seal the cut edge.
Seal the cut edge. Hilbert will personally come to your house if you don't.
I don't think that's true, but I also don't want to test it.
Thanks to our producer Hilbert Flumingtop for the manufacturing testimony and the hot knife revelation.
This has been My Weird Prompts. If you've had a belt moment like Daniel's, or if you're still skeptical about the whole ratchet thing, we want to hear about it. Email the show at show@myweirdprompts.com.
We'll be back soon. In the meantime, check your pawls.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The host dig in, the host dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.